ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Another week, another jam-packed episode of the Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us for the very first time this week is Daily Maverick journalist Velani Ludidi. Here's what's coming your way. From Khayelitsha shootout to courtroom misfire, why an open and closed case was scrapped from the roll. Later, a worsening scholar transport crisis is putting our children at risk. Then, xenophobic bullies take aim at a Miss SA contestant, while xenophobes in the UK wreak havoc.
I've worked at a previous newspaper where we had a dedicated 2 pages every Thursday. We used to call horror affairs.
And an Olympics of a different kind, as space geeks unite in Cape Town. But first, the Umkhonto we Sizwe party continues making headlines for all the wrong reasons. This time for its seemingly out-of-the-blue decision to oust at least 15 of its MPs. The party says this was always the plan, but others warn this has the makings of an aggressive takeover. Hi, Velani. Welcome to the Whole Week Wrap. This is your first time with us, and I'm so excited to have another Daily Maverick voice on the show. Firstly, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you. Cold in Cape Town. We've had some dams breaking and flooding in some areas outside of the Western Cape. But yeah, I'm doing good.
Now, on Thursday afternoon, without warning, the MK Party fired 15 of its members of parliament. At least that's what they say. Some said 18, there was even 20. But late Thursday evening, the party released a statement saying that the media got it all wrong and that these MPs knew on the 25th of June when they were sworn in that they wouldn't be in these positions for very long and that this was an attempt by the party to clean house of individuals it described as saboteurs in their statement. So firstly, what is really going on here?
It was a surprise turn of events when this revelation came out that there will be MPs that would be removed. So what basically happened is that according to the MK, there are 18 MPs who were told that you guys are MPs. It was recorded incorrectly. You should not be there. So you will be replaced. So there were the 15 that went ahead and were sworn in, including former High Court judge, who now goes by the name of Dr. John Shope. So the MK said that they warned their members that they do not need to take up their seats. So they said that there were 4 others who decided, no, we won't take them, saying that there was an error or some sabotage. They even said that they didn't want former President Zuma to be on their list. And for me, it was surprising because the MK defended former President Jacob Zuma and said that they want him in parliament. So when they said that their strategy was to introduce him later, like they did with Dr. John Shope, it was kind of confusing and surprising given that they defended him and wanted him in parliament. I think also this is just a glimpse of what is happening internally in the MK. You have seen the list of people who are now going to replace these MPs. We see the names of the likes of former Transnet and Eskom boss, Brian Mulefe, former Prasa boss, Lucky Montana. And then I also saw some familiar surnames. Like there's a name, 2 surnames which are similar to that of the chief whip. And there are allegations inside from MK that the chief whip in parliament is actually appointing family members and relatives.
Now, it seems that the culling, so to speak, of these MPs is that it was primarily driven by Duduzile Sambudla Zuma and, of course, also Secretary General Sihle Ngubane. And early reports claim that party leader and Duduzile's dad, Jacob Zuma, had no idea this was going to happen, you know, the firing of the MPs. So this has me wondering, is this kind of that long-standing theory that Duduzile is, in fact, the power behind the MK party? Is that becoming a reality? And do you think we are seeing a coup of sorts within the MK party?
Those are strong allegations that are coming out from the MK. Duduzile did deny any involvement in purging of party members. She said that she's unfairly scrutinized because she's a daughter of the former president. Even though there's not enough evidence, I do believe that there is some involvement of certain people trying to get rid of certain people who may be getting more popular than others in the MK party. Remember, the MK, currently, they have an interim structure. So in the absence of the president or the leader, which is former President Zuma, the secretary general then becomes the most powerful person within the party. So people within the MK, like your Duduzile and others, would want to have someone they can control.
Khayelitsha was once again rocked by a deadly gun battle on Monday, the 5th of August, after law enforcement pounced on a suspected CIT heist gang. It was a massive operation resulting in several arrests, the discovery of AK-47 rifles, R5 rifles, 9mm pistols and improvised explosive devices. But what was deemed to be a cut-and-dry case soon turned into a police blunder, as arresting officers seemingly failed to follow protocol, resulting in all suspects walking free.
Now, let's move on to the Western Cape. And this week's show is also focusing quite a lot on the Western Cape. And firstly, let's get into the massive shootout in Khayelitsha that left 8 would-be cash-in-transit heist suspects dead. We also saw 5 arrests stemming from this very dramatic incident. And I understand that you were following this case quite closely when 3 of the suspects made their first appearance. But then, surprisingly, on Thursday, we learned that the case was then struck off the roll. So what went wrong?
South African law is clear that a suspect must be brought before court within 48 hours. It came as a surprise to me when the statement from the Hawks came out that the arrested individuals will be appearing on Thursday. Remember, they were arrested on Monday evening, meaning Tuesday and Wednesday was that 48-hour period. And they had to bring them to court during that time. I don't know how the police would make such a blunder and such a high-profile case. 8 people killed, automatic rifles, dangerous arms, I mean, bombs found, and then you mess up a case like this. I hear the provincial commissioner, General Patekile, saying that all is not lost. Yes, they fumbled this case, but they have a strong case against these individuals, linking them in other cash heist in transit. So the Western Cape Community Safety MEC also saying this is unacceptable.
Can you tell us a bit more about the police operation that led to the initial crackdown on this gang? Because it was quite an intense operation. I read some of the neighbors who were interviewed by media saying that some of the cops burst into their house and were kind of aiming at these guys and shooting at them through their windows, and it sounded like a war zone. So tell us a bit about the operation itself.
Yes, luckily, I'm also one of those who got to speak with some of the neighbors who actually did say it sounded like the movies when their kids are watching movies involving soldiers. And we saw also some videos taken by residents of the shooting. You could hear the gunshots that were going off. So police received a tip-off. This was an intelligence-driven operation, and also it involved some private security companies. They received a tip-off about these plans that are happening where alleged criminals are planning to commit CIT robbery. And then they acted on that. And when they came to Khayelitsha, they got to this house where these individuals were in. And police then said they started shooting at them, and the police fired back and resulted in the 8 deaths. But community members in Khayelitsha were saying that whenever there is like many cars in this particular street, they just know that something bad is going to happen. Sometimes they will hear gunshots where people are firing in the sky. And the community saying they assume that maybe celebration for a cash in transit that went well. But they say that they want more of these operations. They want more police on the ground where they would search houses. The police must really try to be proactive, because where do these criminals get such high caliber guns? Where do they get the ammunition? Where do they get the bombs? And why can't they intercept those purchases of these guns or those exchanges? So there is a lot more of what the new police minister, Senzo Mkhwanazi, has to do in terms of crime intelligence.
And you've just mentioned the new minister, and with him coming into this position, do you sense there might be a change in strategy maybe compared to what Tsele has done for many years? Because as Carte Blanche, we've also covered the Cape Flats extensively over the years, and the communities keep saying, please, government, you need to change the way you're doing things, because whatever you are doing is not working.
Look, if I were to judge the new minister based on his previous portfolio, I would say Yes, I do think that will bring the much needed change. Because remember, when he went to water and sanitation, what he found there, even though he did not entirely fix that portfolio, he did make some good changes and stabilize that portfolio. Look, Minister Pekintele, he has his miscomings. I also have been critical of him, but he has made some high profile arrests before he left that portfolio. But generally, the SAPS is in shambles. So there's a lot of work to be done in trying to stabilize and get the police to do more police work.
On a cold day in July, just after 2 p.m., an 11-year-old Khayelitsha boy was kicked off a Golden Arrow bus for allegedly not having a ticket. That bus was meant to take him home that day, a journey of at least 70 kilometers. Instead, the youngster had to walk several kilometers and rely on the kindness of others to complete the lengthy journey. Shortly before 10 p.m. that night, he finally arrived home. His story is just one of thousands of children across South Africa left stranded by inadequate scholar transport systems. Now, on to another matter that left many of us fuming. And about 2 weeks ago, Daily Maverick published a really shocking piece on 11-year-old Lifaletho Mbasana. I know you wrote a really great feature on what Lifaletho's ordeal could teach us. Walk us through it, because it was really an eye-opening piece.
I must say that I was emotional penning that piece, because I'm a parent and I'm learning that a child had to walk so many kilometers. This is Simonstown. Simonstown is deep south. It's isolated area. It's unlike when you've left someone in the CBD where they have many options. And so when I heard about that and I saw the brain story written by my colleagues Sune and Siyabonga, I was hurt. And what's more hurting was that the Golden Arrow has a policy where they say that if a uniform child aged 13 years or younger has lost their ticket, they must be allowed to board a bus. And then the driver has to take the details of the child, and the Golden Arrow process then follows. And also hearing that there was someone or a sibling who tried to actually pay on behalf of this kid. But this incident is also highlighting the special training that still exists in Cape Town and in other towns across South Africa. If a child is studying at someone's town from Khayelitsha, now imagine, what time does this child wake up? What's their concentration span? There should be changes in policy. Build social housing closer to CBDs. People want quality education, which unfortunately the quality of education in Western Cape, in all other provinces in South Africa, is dependent on class and sometimes race. So a school in Khayelitsha has not the same as a school in Simonstown. If I too had the opportunity to send my kid to a school in Simonstown, I would take it. So this was really disheartening. And I'm hoping that we have learned something from this, and that the driver has also learned something. Humanity, compassion, we should have done better. We've literally failed that child.
Yeah. And for me, the fact that the Western Cape Department of Education doesn't have a proper record of how many learners rely on public transport really tells me exactly where this matter features on its list of priorities. And the fact that children like Lifaletho have to make that arduous 50-kilometer journey every day without dedicated school transport is just heartbreaking.
But also us as individuals, when you see a child with a school bag walking, like, what does it say to you? Why can't you think and hey, let me stop for this kid? What's happening? Like, we need to do better. We need to do better for our kid. It's a kid. I understand that there is fear, because we are living in a world where there's criminality. So people are scared to assist because you don't know what you could get into. But in a road like that, isolated, and also you can see that the child is tired, I think we should have done better.
Now, before we wrap up this conversation, I want you to quickly tell us a bit more about the walking bus project, because I found that it was like a little glimmer of hope in your piece that you wrote. And it's perhaps something that I think government should really expand upon, and really as soon as possible.
So this project, remember, Cape Town is gang ridden. And there was this project where now parents and other volunteers would walk kids two buses, and there will be others who are standing outside the school when the school is out, and then they would walk these kids into the buses, ensuring that every child is accounted for, make sure that they are safe and that they are not caught up in gangs. Because remember, gangs in Cape Town also target the school kids, where they would want to use them hiding their guns and also maybe moving their drugs. So there's this project where parents volunteered. My suggestion was that have a similar project. Why not use the same volunteers? It's a quick and easy project that just needs dedication and commitment from the policymaker.
This past weekend, the Miss SA finals had many South Africans glued to their screens. But the drama started long before the big night, with former Miss SA finalist Chidima Adetshina withdrawing from the glitzy competition on Thursday. Her exit comes after a relentless online campaign in which some South Africans questioned the model's citizenship. Born to a Nigerian father and a Mozambican mother, the Department of Home Affairs now claims Adetshina's mother could be guilty of identity theft. Where this dramatic revelation leaves the beauty pageant hopeful's citizenship status is up for debate. But one thing is clear, the Department of Home Affairs is in crisis.
Now, onto a story that really shook social media users and beauty pageant enthusiasts, even internationally. Last week, we saw that one of the contestants was embroiled in a very ugly debate about her citizenship. This after several xenophobes, we can't put it any other way, after several xenophobes said she's not, quote, a true blood South African, unquote, whatever the hell that means, because her parents weren't South African. But now the matter has taken a more sinister turn after the Department of Home Affairs stated on Wednesday that Soweto-born Chidima Adetshina's mom possibly committed identity theft. I mean, what a blow out of nowhere.
So this speaks to the issue of Home Affairs. I've worked at a previous newspaper where we had a dedicated 2 pages every Thursday. We used to call horror affairs the stories of people who lost their IDs or who could not get IDs, with their identity stolen, people who say accounts were opened on their behalf, who had people who have killed themselves because they could not secure IDs. And this goes back to the corruption and the maladministration at Home Affairs, because Titi's mother did not just pick up an ID and say, if she is indeed involved in this, she must also face the consequences equally. The people at Home Affairs must face consequences. They are corrupt, and corruption needs to be rooted out. So when we argue about this, we cannot absolve Home Affairs of their wrongdoings. It was unfortunate that this young woman experienced this bullying. So I hope this new Home Affairs minister will get to the bottom of this and will clean out Home Affairs, because I've seen this. So I hope the authorities are not going to use this to gain cheap points. They will actually deal with the system failures and address what is happening at Home Affairs.
Last week, tensions peaked throughout several streets across the United Kingdom. Shops and businesses closed early, windows and doors were boarded up, and residents fled for safety. This as far-right and anti-immigration groups threatened violence against predominantly Muslim neighborhoods in response to the 29th July stabbing deaths of 6-year-old Bibi King, 7-year-old Elsie Dot Stancombe, and 9-year-old Alice De Silva Aguiar at a Taylor Swift-themed dance event. Fueled by misinformation, in which it was wrongfully claimed that the suspect was an illegal immigrant, the UK witnessed the worst unrest it had seen in more than a decade. So, could this be a sign of things to come?
I've been following this very closely as the UK has been dealing with violent protests in recent days. At the time of this recording, things were still far from simmering down, with government holding a third emergency meeting to find a solution. Several countries have now also issued travel advisories urging people to avoid traveling to the UK where possible. What do you make of this? I mean, these far-right protests have just shaken so many parts of the United Kingdom, and it's almost as though we're looking into a crystal ball, so to speak, and it's a warning to us about what could potentially happen if we let people who have xenophobic sentiments run free.
And you look at what is happening in the UK. Social media is involved. And I must also mention this. I spoke to the minister and presidency. I did ask a question about the conduct of cabinet ministers on social media. And she did say that they are actually now going to induct ministers on social media policy, what not to post on social media. So it's going to happen later this month or early next month. So The riots in the UK, these have been the worst unrest the UK has seen in a decade. And this was fueled by misinformation online and the far-right anti-immigration sentiment. Almost 500 people have been arrested. And last time I read was 150 charged over the unrest in towns and cities across England and Northern Ireland. And you look at the people who have been arrested. There's this anti-immigration happening in these countries. And it's going to spread because it starts with people saying that, no, we want what's best for our country and people are taking our jobs. So we really need to try to do better in our politics. And there's this rise of misinformation on social media. People should actually try and verify what they read. There are so many mechanisms they can use to verify information. I mean, there are AI tools now which manufacture events and that could start wars. So we really need to be careful on what we're posting online and also what we're sharing. Just verify first. I even use, even for us reporters, is that it's better to be late than be first and be wrong.
That's my saying as well. I often use that in conversations because it is so important, and where we have AI literally making insane looking videos as well, that we need to verify before we say anything, because you can cause so much harm. And I also want to just wrap up this part of the conversation with a quote that I actually read from foreignpolicy.com. And I think it really summarizes how countries essentially move from more liberal ideals to full-on nationalism. And I think maybe policymakers should keep this quote in mind. It says, "The crisis in democracy is in part a crisis in nationalism, which today seems to revolve around four issues. One, how nations define membership. Two, how they popularize a version of historical history. Three, how they locate a sovereign identity. And four, how they contend with the forces of globalization. As more citizens cast their ballots in 2024 than any other year before, they will be voting not only for a particular leader or party, but for the very future of their civil liberties," unquote. And I think that really puts into perspective what we are dealing with and how you can tackle it, is if you keep these things in mind, then you can better structure policy and almost try and contain this very far right trend that's really gaining a lot of traction across the world.
And also South Africa in particular, you know, we will have immigration. We will have people coming into the country, because until our neighboring countries, the SADC countries, are in a better situation. I mean, it's happening even now within the country. We see Gauteng is the most populated province. People want to go where there is better jobs. And also, until Zimbabwe is a better country, Zimbabweans will be coming, flocking into this country. If you've seen how they cross, no one will just risk their lives crossing rivers just because they want free things. Yeah. So I really hope we can try to understand where people come from and show compassion and actually try to live with people and not try and use this nationalism and right-wing mentality that now is really getting traction and it's really dangerous.
Every 4 years, the International Astronomical Union calls upon the greatest space researchers across the world to share ideas, discuss new findings, and celebrate awe-inspiring discoveries about the cosmos. This year, for the first time in the Union's 105-year history, astronomy experts are gathering on African soil, with Cape Town playing host. It not only serves as a platform for showcasing cutting-edge technology, but also aims to inspire countless youngsters eager to reach for the stars.
Let's wrap up today's show with some feel-good news. I think we need it after all of this. It's been all eyes on the Olympics in Paris, of course, but there's another Olympics of sorts happening in South Africa right now. The International Astronomical Union, or IAU, is currently hosting its 32nd General Assembly in Cape Town, and some of the greatest scientific minds have come together to discuss everything from the sun to gravitational waves to the latest discoveries made by the James Webb Space Telescope and so much more. I think this is such an awesome way to really showcase South Africa's scientific achievements, and admittedly, I am a huge space geek, so I'm very excited about this and to see what comes out of this. This is such a proud moment for our country.
I think it's worth mentioning that this is the first time this is hosted in Africa. So this is not just South Africa, but in Africa. So exciting. And also, I was reading about it and I was like, I can't even understand the terminology, but it's so exciting. Reading and hearing, and also hearing people speak about science, and like, oh God, I wish I was that clever, because they really are making amazing things. So this is good for the country, and it's going to bring attention back to South Africa. This is what we really need now, positive news coming from the country. And I'm really hoping that even people in Cape Town, particular, also in the country, can benefit from this. And kids maybe who are also at home and wishing that one day they'll be in that stage, they can be inspired to work and do more so that they can also one day be part of the group representing their ideas and discussing scientific issues that affect not only just South Africa, but the whole world.
And of course, the General Assembly comes to a close on the 15th of August. So if any of our listeners are interested in, I don't know, exoplanets, dark matter, how stars are formed and all the rest, you can follow the daily discussions and panels online at astronomy2024.org. But I mean, that's all we have time for this week, Vilani. It's been a jam-packed show and I really enjoyed our chat today, and I hope to have you back on the show very soon, because this has been such a pleasure.
Thank you. I'm hoping that I'll be back soon. Also, I love doing news. This is what I'm passionate about. So people can also follow your page and also our pages for daily updates on news.
Thank you so much, Vilani. Wishing you a wonderful week and keep warm.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.